All right, welcome back. 239-1310, 239-1310. It's Afternoon's Namus. Our next guest, I guess, is well-suited for the job of being the head of 31 men and women who will be in Daniel's lion's den, surrounded by a herd of 69 elephants trying to stomp all over him. We're talking about the Democrats in the Indiana House of Representatives. Scott Pilath is the pride of Michigan City. He is a graduate of Indiana University. He formerly worked for Congressman Tim Romer. He has served in our military, a first lieutenant in the Army Reserve, armor, which means he knows how to be tough if you're riding in a tank. And I guess he's well suited to be Democratic leader because he, like the President of the United States, is a long-suffering Chicago Bears fan. And with that, we welcome the Democratic leader of the Indiana House of Representatives. Is it Scott? Is it Pilath or Pilath?
You know what? I respond to all of them, Amos, but Pilath is the right
okay.
one. Nailed it the first time.
There you go. Welcome. Glad to have you.
Hey, thanks, Amos. Merry Christmas and all that stuff.
Merry Christmas. So, do you feel like Daniel, you and the 30 of your colleagues, in this pit of elephants in this legislative session that begins next month?
Amos, that is the second biblical reference regarding our situation that's been given to me in the past 24 hours. Because somebody yesterday compared it to David and Goliath.
There you go.
But I tell you what, it can feel that way if you want to focus on the technical aspects of numbers. But I tell you what, the real thing is it's a very exciting time to be a Democrat. And I know that may be a surprising thing for some folks to hear. But what we have learned in the face of these maps, in the face of these attacks on working people, in the face of the overwhelming amount of money sometimes that our adversaries have, what we've really learned is that it all comes down to the basics. This is an opportunity to focus on our message, to talk to people about real solutions for real folks with real problems, and we have a chance to do that now. And I think if you talk to other members who are serving in the same capacity as me, they're looking forward to the fight ahead, and they know that they're going to get to fight back with the best tool they have available, and that's their voices.
How important, how critical is it that the message Democrats say in this next legislative session is we're the party that is dedicated to raising the incomes of Hoosier men and women? I mean, our households are slipping in terms of income. I was over with Senator-elect Donnelly on Saturday at the Gleaners Food Bank here, and just seeing those people that were waiting to get foodstuffs and looking at them, they were predominantly white. They just looked like working class folks. These were not like the poor, quote unquote. These were like ordinary Hoosier families who were there trying to stretch their budget. And it kind of may, and when I see all these economic statistics from the Census Bureau, the latest updates, the report that Indiana Black Expo put out last week, things are getting worse, not better.
Well, that's right. And as a matter of fact, Amos, you nailed it. The thing that Democrats have to do is articulate a different economic vision for the future of Indiana. Because so often, and you've heard it from our adversaries across the aisle, their solution to every problem is that if you just get money and power into the hands of the right people, if you just get it in the hands of the boardrooms, or if you just help your friends who helped you get elected, then those folks will magically do nice things for the rest of us. And that is not the way the world works. We need a future in Indiana where people are going to have fair wages for a hard day's work. If they work hard, their lives are going to get better. And the best part of that, if you're talking about growing an economy, that means that people have paychecks they can go spend at other local businesses and create jobs for other people. Now, we need an economy, and we hear the president talk about it all the time, that is built from the ground up, from the middle out. And we need to just get past this idea that it's all about people helping their friends that sit in the boardrooms of power.
what position is the caucus going to take in terms of maybe protecting the superintendent of public instruction? The incoming is too strong a word, but making sure that she's not a whipping girl. And the reason I say that is you don't get as many votes as she got just from union members and just from Democrats. There was a whole lot of Republicans in a lot of small counties when I looked at the vote total that voted for Glenda Ritz.
Well, I tell you what, the other side sort of got sneered by their own hook, didn't they?
Yeah.
They always thought that they would have that superintendent's office, and boy, did they get a message on election night. I got to tell you what, I've met with our incoming state superintendent. She is terrific. She's going to be a great voice for education and for making sure that every child gets a chance here in Indiana. And I have told her that certainly the House Democrats, and I know the same is true on the Senate side, we're going to be supporting her. Regardless of what comes her way, she is going to have the bully pulpit to talk about what's best for what happens in classrooms. And we're going to do whatever we can inside the House to amplify whatever message she's spreading and the work she's going to do.
Is part of the message on education that those – one of my theories is the school reformers, when you heard a lot about school reform, the plans they were always talking about – inner city schools, or this is how we're going to get African-American students to achieve better, and so we want the vouchers and we want the charters, and it's all designed for inner city schools. And then all of a sudden, some of the other reforms that Tony Bennett put through, the grading system that had a lot of educators and school board members raising their hands, the attacks on teachers, all this extra stuff. All of a sudden, other districts around the state said, wait a minute, I thought the school reform stuff was for the big city. Nobody told us it was for us.
Well, I tell you what, one thing, Amos, I think that we need to stop doing amongst ourselves and amongst the folks who are critical of Tony Bennett,
mm-hmm.
We need to stop calling those changes reforms.
Uh-huh.
They were changes, and a lot of them were not for the better. And I think it one thing we learned from the past election is that folks still care an awful lot about traditional public schools. They don't like kids being treated as commodities. They're open to ways of things being done better, but they don't like the idea that our school system is just going to be sort of this freewheeling, free market experiment that impacts kids. What parents want and what families want, they want safe schools. They want kids to be able to go there and have the opportunity to learn on equal footing with other kids. And if they're falling behind, they want kids to get extra help. Those are very basic and simple things. And I think that's what the Democratic Caucus can be reminding people of in conjunction with our state superintendent, that we need to fix a lot of what Tony Bennett did, and we also need to remember that we need to keep trying to do the basics right. We shouldn't be giving up on our public schools, because giving up on our public schools means giving up on a lot of kids, and that's not right.
You may have a question for the Democratic leader in the House of Representatives, or maybe an issue that you want him to be sensitive to, as well as the members of the caucus. 239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Now, you're in Michigan City. And you guys are part of a mass transit district. You got the electric train that goes from South Bend all the way to downtown Chicago. Here we are, the world's worst public transportation system in this country. Bloomington is better, and Muncie is better than it. Michigan City is better than Indianapolis. And obviously Indianapolis people are going to be knocking on the legislature's door to give Marion County and Hamilton County and maybe some others the right to decide what kind of mass transit we're going to do. They don't have enough votes in the Republican caucus to get this through. It's going to take Democratic votes. What kind of position will the caucus take on that? Is this going to also be a wait and see?
Well, you know what? You always have to have a wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we all agree in principle mass transit is extraordinarily important, because one of the problems in our economy is that when there are open jobs, people either aren't getting the training that they need to fill the jobs that are open now or the jobs that might be open tomorrow. And as one of my mentors, the great Bill Crawford, used to say, it's great to have jobs, but you got to be able to get to them. So mass transit, it certainly is important. Now, having said that, we have to, as Democrats, we have to look for opportunities to make sure that people are treated fairly, to make sure there's inclusion in decision making, and to make sure that when our votes may be required for things like revenue raising measures, and a lot of the folks have given away their votes to people like Grover Norquist, that we make sure that the people that we serve are going to be have a key stake in whatever major decisions are made. So certainly we have to contemplate, are you going to have the type of system that is really going to accomplish what we need, which is people getting new opportunities for jobs that are available, or is it going to be serving some other purpose that we're not aware of? And those are going to be things we're going to be looking at with a very critical eye. I'm hopeful that somebody I have a lot of faith in, Greg Porter, who is going to be our fiscal leader, from the Democratic side in the House of Representatives, is going to be one of the good stewards of potential mass transit changes. And I certainly look to folks like that to make sure we're on the right track.
With Scott Piloff, the Democratic leader in the House, is the caucus concerned that the Republicans may take some punitive measures against Lake County and against Marion County? I just saw where Senator Luke Kenley has the gall to demand that Lake County have a local option income tax. And I thought a local option income tax was locals had the option to decide whether to tax themselves. And we here in Marion County, I mean, we're facing a constitutional crisis where the county executive, the mayor, has impounded county option income tax money that would flow to county constitutional agencies like the sheriff, the coroner, the clerk, the assessor, the auditor, the coroner, and just impound the monies, and come the beginning of the year, those agencies could go out of business or suffer drastic budget cuts, and we're afraid that the Republicans may put some actions in here to give the mayor super extra powers. Is the Democratic caucus concerned about these punitive measures towards the two strongest Democratic counties in the state?
Well, absolutely. And we're always on guard for those things, and we probably have to be extra vigilant now. You know, Amos, sometimes you have to sit back and just wonder how much power do some folks believe that they actually need? Mm-hmm. And it seems to continue to be unsettling to some of our friends across the aisle that there's dissenters in Indiana. And you named them. It's Marion County. It's Northwest Indiana. And those aren't the only two parts of the state. But certainly those are hotbeds of disagreement with the current administration and likely with the incoming one. What we have to do is, whenever these types of things are initiated, these folks have to be called on it. Mm-hmm. They have to be called on. They have to be called on it directly, because none of the punitive measures against local units of government have anything to do with making the state better. They don't have anything to do with bringing government closer to the people. They merely have to do with gamesmanship at the state house. And that's the type of thing that I think people on both parties are getting a little bit sick of.
239-1310, 239-1310's After News Name, with Scott Piloff, the Democratic leader in the House. Let me go to a couple callers. Let me go to Brother Kareem right quick at 239-1310. Hi there. Brother Kareem, going once, going twice.
Hello?
You're on the air with the Democratic leader of the House.
Okay, listen, I got a question. Uh-huh. For him dealing with this education, you know, in 1868, Ferguson and Plessy versus Ferguson, 1956, Brown versus Board of Education. Then you had all this desegregation. Now you got charterization. And my problem is, what is the Democrat going to do about treating our children, African-American children? I have to say this because every time I listen to commercials now, all I'm hearing is that they're doing a special study on black children. They're doing special studies on African-American children. Why are they not doing this and why are they not doing that? How can our children prosper in a system that's bent over for backwards from school, from third and fourth grade? I think the phrase is the school, the pipeline, the prison for black kids. How can the Democratic Party turn that around? Because our children are disenfranchised, our parents is getting money based upon the fact that they saying our kids are sick. Then you get upset with our superintendent of IPS because all these different elements out here fighting against him trying to have a quality school education in the inner city. You got a talk show host that is trying to educate people to tell you that the African-American children are no longer concentrated in Marion County or Center Township, that we need to deal with what's going on around Center Township. And then every time you look up, you got people like the mayor and his boys knocking everything that we need for education for the black community. So I want to know, what is the Democrats going to do about this bias, this racist, and this just insensitive move against black children? Then they want to label them all over the daggone news as incompetent. Our children are not incompetent, but they got a system that seems to work against them to make them look like that so they can wind up in prison.
All right. Let me let the representative respond.
Thank you. Boy, lot of points in there, but they're the kinds of ones that I think we can have a good discussion about. You said a couple important dates. 1898 was Plessy versus Ferguson. Mm-hmm. 1954 being Brown versus Board of Education. I want to throw out another date, and that's 1851, and that's when the current Indiana Constitution was adopted. And one of the provisions of that Constitution was that every child be entitled to an education free of charge in a system of common schools. And guess what? We have not ever perfected that. In the last few years, we have taken a step back from it. The thing that we should all dream about with a provision like that is that every kid get a fair chance on an equal footing. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean in the short term? Well, obviously, a point we need to make at the State House, like I mentioned earlier, is that traditional public schools still matter. You can try all the schemes, all the experiments you want. But a lot of times what you do is you're leaving a lot of kids behind when you're not focusing on the traditional public schools. And we're going to do that. The next thing is the way we distribute funding in Indiana is grossly unfair, and it's gotten even less fair. And I'm going to give you an example that has been glossed over the last couple years, but we need to be shouting from the mountaintops. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is that when kids are facing struggles in society, when they're facing struggles at home, when it's hard for them to even get to school in the morning, when they're surrounded by the challenges of life, you cannot plop a child down in a chair and expect them to not need a little bit more help than children from other areas. And that is just a fact. And what is very troubling is that the last few years, where have we seen all the cuts? We've seen all the cuts to areas where kids need it the most. We've seen big cuts to IPS. We've seen big cuts up in Northwest Indiana. And we've seen increases going out to places like the donut counties where they don't need the same. An individual's life may not need the same amount of help. And we need to change that right away because it's very simple that when you're able to provide the resources that are necessary for a child to succeed, until we get that done, we're not going to have the type of fair society that we all want where every kid's going to get an equal chance. And, sir, I think you make a number of very legitimate points, and we cannot shy away from them. We need to talk about the importance of every kid getting a fair chance, and we have to do it based on the system that we've had in place. Improvements, yes, but throwing it out and just dooming them to failure, that's wrong, and we shouldn't stand for it.
We're one of the things, once you guys come back, there's going to be that second school enrollment count. I believe it's in February, now that there's two official count days for funding. That'll be the first time that we'll be able to see how some districts increase in enrollment during the school year because of, you know, of students moving around. That's a statistic that I know you have heard from school superintendents over the years. Now we're going to see this in practice.
Right. And I think that was actually a positive change that happened by adding the second count. And maybe more have to be added in the future. I suppose that's a bit of an open question. But you know, the way that the powers that be at the State House have structured school funding, you know, money for charter schools comes right off the top mm-hmm. of the available school dollars. Money for things like the voucher experiments comes right off the top of the available school dollars. That means less dollars left over for the traditional public schools and the kids that are in them. And we need to, by adding the extra account, you're able to mitigate the damage a little bit, because the way it was is that maybe a child would go to a charter school, they'd realize it wasn't all that was cracked up to be. The parent would put the child back in traditional school, but all the money stayed with the charter school. Hopefully we can mitigate that a little bit, make it a little fairer. I think that's probably going to require some additional improvements, but it's certainly a step in the right direction.
Let me go to Ann at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos.
Hi.
Your guest just made a comment about the Constitution, about how every child has the right to a free education. My question to him is, part of the education is your books. So why
sure.
is Indiana one of the only states that has book rental fees?
Now there's an issue where maybe Democrats could get the love from everybody in the state saying it's time to get. Or
you know what? I mean, is that not a valid question? If you want,
yes, and
and
I think I have a valid answer for you. You know, I first came to the General Assembly in 1998, and the very first bill I introduced was to get rid of textbook fees. I have known parents. They maybe have a lot of kids in their family. They pay $600-$800 a year in textbook fees. That's why I don't call it the textbook fee. I call it the textbook tax. It's not fair. It's a burden on working families, and it needs to change. And I have to tell you what, based on this mammoth surplus that Governor Daniels built up using money from President Obama's stimulus bill. There's no reason that we can't have a discussion about that, and I think that, you know, if the other party, I hate to give them advice, but they were looking for something that would be bound to be popular with the majority of Indiana across all walks of life, it'd be to end that.
But let me ask this, Representative Piloff, there are a number of schools now in Marion County, private schools, where the books are now on iPad because the schools have figured out it is cheaper to give every kid an iPad, and at the end of the year sell it, you know, the kid could buy it off the school, and the school got the money to buy another one, than it is to buy up textbooks. You download the textbooks on the iPad there. Ta-da!
Well, I know, technology always affords a lot of new opportunities. I know from my own girls, I have a lot easier time getting them to read stuff if it's on some sort of
device,
high-tech gadget, than I can just to pick up the book off the bookshelf.
All right, see, Ann is giving you a thing idea, 239-1310. Back to the phones, and Brenda, hi there.
Hello, Amos, how you doing today, sir?
Fine.
And Mr. Scott, how do you spell your last name?
It's Pelath. It's P as in Paul, and then E-L-A-T-H.
Okay, the question is concerning some of the questions that Brother Kareem raised. And what I want to go to is the issues dealing with state-sanctioned child abuse in our educational system. And that's regarding the maltreatment of black children and all children in special education, how oftentimes the school systems are violating the rights for education regarding children with special needs. They're violating federal law pertaining to IDEA. We got racial harassments in our school systems here. We have schools that retaliate against parents when we find out that the school systems are violating our children's educational rights. And then what the state does, meaning the school, they sick their dogs on our families where they report us to for education neglect of our children once the schools have abused them. So my question to you today would be, sir, if Democrats want to really help our children, as Brother Kareem stated, you should come up with an idea, a plan, to file criminal complaints against these educators who systemically, without any kind of guilt, children system. These people, these educators, need to be put in jail for what they're doing to our children. And lastly, sir, right out in Pike Township, we had a child that was put in a closet, a nine-year-old child. And Pike Township has not answered to this. And Pike Township has a history of repeatedly destroying the lives of black boys out there by not only denying them access to educational opportunity, but filing criminal petitions against them. I ask you, sir, as you sit today on Amos Brown's show, what are you going to do about this?
All right, let me let him respond.
Okay. Well, thank you. There's a lot in there, and I have to say I hope you can understand, I'm a little reluctant to comment on the specifics of some individual cases because I'm not personally familiar with them. But I can say in a general sense, a few things. First of all, I think the overwhelming majority of teachers work very, very hard, sometimes under challenging circumstances, and they try to do the best job that they can. And many of them love the work that they do, and they have as much as they're able, the best interests of the child at heart. But it is a broader thing. I think one thing that we need to get to make improvements here in Indiana is in our child protection, child welfare system. We need to have better mechanisms where if there's things like abuse and neglect that is suspected or believed, that it's acted on quickly, that it gets in the hands of the right people, that the local decision makers who are closest to the situation have the ability to act, and that people have the ability to report things without any punitive measures being taken or any sort of retaliation. We found that in order to keep kids safe, it really doesn't take a few, it takes the many. It takes an entire community. And until we have everyone who feels comfortable reporting cases and making sure that those cases are going to be dealt with promptly and fairly and accurately in the best interest of the child, we'll have a lot more work to do. And I assure you that Democrats are going to be talking a lot about that over the coming months. They're going to be offering critiques to the current administration. But they're going to be prepared to help improve the system, because one thing both parties ought to be able to agree on is that one child being injured or being treated in a manner that's harmful, that's one too many.
Well, let me kind of rephrase what Brenda was talking about, Representative Piloff. We have a Bill of Rights for voters in this state that outlines what a voter's rights and responsibilities are. We've kind of kicked around on this program, and I mentioned it to some of the legislators, whether it's time that we need a Bill of Rights and Responsibilities for parents so that parents understand what their rights are, what the chain of command is in a public school. Because there's people still confused and think that charter schools are private schools and they're not public schools and they don't have that chain of command, as well as what is the parent's responsibility. You got to make sure your kid is in school. On time, every day, ready to work. Because if a parent feels that a school system has violated the rights of their child, there is a lot of confusion out here in the real world how to proceed, how to bring a complaint.
Yeah, I think, a lot of these things sometimes can vary, maybe even from school system to school system, but There's unquestionably a need to, as complex as our society has gotten and as complicated as we make government for people, we need to, in education, the relationship that exists between, or once existed between teachers and parents, and it being an umbrella that educated a child with both realms being of supreme importance, we probably need to work to repair that somewhat, and I've seen it in my own community.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that there was a relationship between the educational staff and the parents that more often than not was productive, and we don't see that all the time simply because the world has grown complicated and people are struggling.
Right.
And I think that the caller raised a few very excellent points about how we improve the flow of information between both. Maybe we need to consider some one-stop shopping,
right,
within school, so parents can have an immediate resource they can go to. Say, look, my child is having this problem. How do I deal with it? Something as simple as that could be a step in the right direction.
Let me go one more call, anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
Your guest, Mr. Scott. My question is, my granddaughter was talking to me the other day about why the school systems have stopped having economics for the girls, you know, that they used to go, you know, and had the shops for the boys and girls to do cooking and things. She said she would have liked to have learned how to do that. Now she's graduating from high school, but she never got that. She said she would have liked to learn how to sew, but, you know, she never got that opportunity. And so she's wondering if they were ever going to put that back into the schools for the next generation.
That's a great question, Representative Pilaf. The governor-elect, Mike Pence, is talking about those issues. That's one of the things I found a little common ground with him on, you know, vocational education, trying to find those subjects that employers say they need. You don't necessarily need the college degree for that, and that might be
right.
Subjects that turns on a student to excelling in school.
Yeah,
Is that a common ground?
Another good point there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of common ground on that issue, and that's I've thought the same thing for quite some time because here in the legislature we all have. Or most of us, anyways, have other jobs. We're a citizen institution. I just know in my own line of work, I work in mental health. All the times we have certain skill sets that are needed, but kids in the schools never had the chance to learn them.
Mm.
We need to do a better job at encouraging kids and providing opportunities for them to learn specific skills, where they can quickly become contributors to society, where they can build self-esteem, and most importantly, where they can earn a wage for a job that's in demand and can support their family and pass those skills on to their kids. We'd need to do a much better job at doing that. Too many kids are getting pushed in the wrong direction. It causes them to lose hope and self-esteem. And what they really need to be doing is acquiring the skills of things that they really love doing. And along with that, we need to provide the opportunities for people to find out what it is that they do love. And that means having diversity in the school system programming and their coursework. And some of our friends in Indianapolis don't like to hear this, but sometimes that means making sure that dollars get directed to the right places. And that's something we're going to, while we're going to agree in concept, we're probably going to be arguing about that because it means investing in our kids. And there's unfortunately too frequently been a reluctance to do that among some.
So, Leader Pilaf, the session, what starts, the week of the 7th? Starts the week of the 7th. The first time we broadcast from the legislature, the first radio station program ever to do it, still, I think the only one that does it on a regular basis. We did it. It was kind of a jerry-rigged out of some, I think it was fax machine line next to the leader's office on the Democrat side. And then we discovered the Republicans, for some reason other than their side, had the more convenient phone access. So we've always been over there. But we're looking at the first time we come down in January, going back to the day and doing the program from the D side of the third floor.
Now you're talking.
Now am I talking good?
You are talking good.
Well,
and, I want you to do that, and you need to let me know what we need to do to make a home for you there.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to
follow. You know, our friend Abdul is going to be doing some stuff from there. We got to make sure that he's.
Well, he's.
We got to make sure you're there too, Amos.
Oh well, he's only internet. I'm the one with the gray hair and the veteran, and my audience wants to make sure I'm in a better place than he
That's
is.
Right.
So I'm going to work with you. The great folks in your communication staff on the House Democrat side, they are great people to work with. All the staff on the Democratic side are great people to work with. But we're definitely going to start 2013. On the south side of the third floor in the legislature, because we just kind of thought having the 31 kind of come over to the other side, that was kind of like, you know, I'll go over to the speaker side because I got to keep in good shape with the speaker side. But we got to start with y'all on your side, and we got the technology now, internet technology, cell technology. At least that's what the engineers tell me that we think we can do that. We're going to work on that, and I'm going to pencil in one of those days, the week of the 7th, we coming. We will be.
And I will tell you what, Amos, as soon as I hang up with you, I'm going to call our media staff so they understand what the deal is.
All right. And again, Representative Scott Piloff, the Democratic leader of the Democrats, they may be outnumbered in numbers, but they got right on their side. Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy New Year to you.
Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy everything, Amos. You hang in there.
All right. You too.